All right. Hello, everybody. It's Dr. Ray Hynes, joined here in the studio, the virtual studio, if you will, with, of course, the wonderful Blythe Ahlberg. Hey, Blythe.
Hey, how's everybody doing today? I hope you are all having a fantastic day. We are here to bring you another exciting podcast. We've got a lot of great information again for you guys today. Ray's been up to his old research, and I think we have a really cool topic discuss today.
We've talked a lot about protein and high protein diets in the past. Today we're going to get into how do we prevent the body from going into a starved state. Right.
Which I think is a spot where most of society, and I'm going to kind of lump everybody into one. I think most people, it just resonates that if you want to lose weight, you have to starve yourself. Mm-hmm. And that's just putting it bluntly.
Yeah. You know, to drive the point home, my sister had me basically do a weight loss program, a 16-week weight loss program for her and a bunch of her coworkers and friends in here in Maryland. Mm-hmm. And one of the questions I always ask the participants of the 16-week program is, what do you believe you need to do in order to lose weight? And I remember my sister saying this during the course of our weekly meeting. She said, I was just listening in, and she told her friend, if you aren't hungry, you aren't losing. And, you know, that's a philosophy mm-hmm. I think so many people get caught up in. And it couldn't be further from the truth. Am I right?
Yeah, you're right. And, you know, it doesn't matter how many times we hear it. I feel like this can never be pounded into anybody's, including mine. Okay, I'm going to lump myself in there, too, because you feel like if you're hungry, you're making progress on losing, when, in fact, that's not the case. I think the trick is to teach your body or trick your body into feeling satiated while you're just deficient enough so your body is comfortable with losing.
Yeah, you know, the way I like to put it is the ultimate goal of any long-term weight loss program is to convince the body that food is plentiful.
Mm-hmm.
And here's the key. This is the trick. You also have to simultaneously convince the body that energy is required or energy is necessary in order for you to either gather or catch the food.
Mm.
That is the Paleolithic way. That is kind of the caveman way, right? When we were cave people, we had to go and we had to gather our food. In order to do that, we needed energy. And the body was always playing this balancing game of providing just enough energy to be able to gather the food so that we could eat the food and store the food for later, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so that is what we want to achieve. We want to achieve a metabolism that believes that food is plentiful enough and that the energy and metabolism is required to go gather and catch that food. If we can do that, if we can achieve that one goal, we can promote long-term weight loss, long-term specifically fat loss, right?
Yeah, and the key there is long-term, because I don't think anybody's in this to just lose a quick 5 pounds and then, you know, 3 weeks from now, put it back on. I don't think that many people have that goal. So the objective is health and long-term weight loss. And I think the key word here is going to be balance. I mean, we've got to find a balance that we can live with forever, right? Or for the rest of our life.
Yes, very accurate. And, you know, we've talked about this in the past. This is not about just trying to will ourselves to lose weight. We can't do it. And I'm going to explain mm-hmm. that here in a second as I kind of get into some of the more recent research. And why don't we jump into that now? There was a recent study. And Blythe, I'll ask you just to back up a little from the mic just so that the sound doesn't come too muffled.
I think I get a little bit excited sometimes.
Me too. Okay, so in the journal Cell Metabolism, they published this study where they looked at how the brain reacts to starvation or to fasting. And it was very interesting because what they discovered was the brain cells literally begin to digest themselves during times of starvation. And specifically in this study, they were looking at a particular area of the brain that was responsible for sensing and managing the appetite. And what they determined was that when the animal was in a fasted state, a process called autophagy, which literally translated means to eat oneself, occurred in this appetite-sensing area of the brain. So the neurons literally began digesting themselves. And when they digested themselves, it triggered an appetite reaction. So the animal that was fasting or starved, those cells began to digest themselves, and that fasted animal started to increase its appetite and food consumption. Now, what was interesting, when the researchers inhibited that autophagy within that particular area of the brain, they fasted the mice, and the mice continued to lose weight without appetite. So it was a pretty good indication that this is one primary mechanism by which our bodies are constantly kind of evaluating our environment to see what kind of environment we're living in. In this case, a fasted state basically triggers a reaction in the body that tells the body that we're living during a time of famine. And so when they inhibited that digestion of those neurons chemically, they were able to show that even during times of fasting, the mice did not develop a kind of a reactive appetite. Pretty interesting stuff.
That's pretty cool. So the part I'm trying to get here is your body has a chemical reaction to the fasted state. So if we can keep our body from having that chemical reaction, that is what's going to keep us from either overeating or not eating enough, and keep our body in that tricked mode. Is that right?
That's right. And
okay, and
it kind of speaks to how the current philosophy in the conventional weight loss arena, and I'm speaking to dietetics and conventional medicine, is that all we need to do to lose weight is to will ourselves to not eat the food and will ourselves to get into the gym. But what this research is showing, or basically proving, because we've talked about this in the past, is that this process of weight gain and weight loss is biochemical and physiologic in nature. We can't will ourselves to long-term leanness. We can will ourselves to short-term weight loss.
Yes.
But we can't.
Key.
Yeah, that is the key. We can't will ourselves to long-term leanness because we have all of these mechanisms that are happening beneath the surface. For example, this is just one mechanism of probably hundreds that are built to keep us from burning away our precious fat. You gotta remember, even though we hate our fat, our body loves it. Our body thinks it is essential for our survival.
Right, yeah, it's a necessity. So yeah, the key to losing the fat is to trick it away.
Yep, small calorie deficits almost always trump large calorie deficits. Starvation, basically, this is the core concept here with this discussion, is that starvation is not a plan, right?
Right. It actually gives you the exact polar opposite results of what you're actually going for.
Right.
If fat loss is your objective. I mean, you could, okay, I think here's where the big misconception is that say you're somebody who has never had your body fat checked. You're now 25 pounds overweight. You know, it's been a few years since you've been to the gym. And you go in and you start doing your cardiovascular exercise. You get on the elliptical and you work out for 25 minutes and you stop eating. Maybe you're eating like something small for breakfast and then you don't eat again till dinner time. You will lose weight. But there, and this but is huge. You could be in total calorie deficit all day. You will lose weight. But when that stops, you will put that weight back on and extra. And I'm not saying when you stop exercising or stop the fasting, that will come to an end because your body will recognize what's going on and it won't take long. So if you're looking for the long term, which all of us are, I don't think anybody's looking for a short term weight loss. Do it the right way so you don't put extra on. And that's the nail I'm trying to hammer into everybody's head lately is you can't just want to lose weight. You have to want to lose the body fat. And the only way you can hone in on just losing body fat is by going about it the right way. And starvation leads to fat gain. And I just don't think that that's advertised enough. There are so many appetite suppressants and things out there that everybody thinks, oh, my God, appetite, appetite, appetite. I'm eating too much. When, in fact, you're not eating enough of the right foods to trick your body into feeling okay to burn fat stores.
Right. And you can do it on both fronts. You can exercise a tremendous amount and burn so much energy that you're putting the body into a perceived state of starvation, even though you may be eating a lot of food. So – Yeah, the question is, what makes it so difficult, Blythe, I've found, is that sometimes it's hard to pinpoint what type of person they are. Are they eating too much? Because you can, of course, get fat or gain fat by eating too much. And that's primarily, I think, how most people get into that position. But you can stay fat by starving yourself.
Yes.
Right? So you don't get fat by starving yourself per se, but you can stay fat by starving yourself.
That's
right. Most people flip-flop between eating too much and eating too little. And what we want to do is we want to turn you, as we said in previous podcasts, we want to turn you into this mythical creature we call a normal eater. That person who says crazy stuff like, no, I don't need any cake. I'm not really interested. Or, no, I've had enough. Thank you very much. I'm full. Those kinds of things. And a lot of people, you know, they look at their friends who kind of have that natural capacity to do that, and they hate them because of it. But what we want to do is we don't want to hate them. We want to bless that in them, and we want to take on that same characteristic ourselves, right?
We want some of that magic, magic yeah. dust that they have.
So let's talk about how to do that.
Okay.
Number one, I'll just reiterate this one point. Starvation is not a plan.
Right.
We want to keep this calorie deficit somewhat small. And yes, you'll lose weight slower. Be ready for that. But it will be sustained weight loss, right? And, you know, I recall a study that I read about, but I cannot find the reference, and I can't even confirm the numbers. But the gist of this is accurate, and that is there was a study, I believe, that they put some people on a 500-calorie deficit diet versus a 250-calorie deficit diet, and actually discovered that the group that was on the 250-calorie deficit diet, meaning they were eating 250 calories less than their body's needs, actually lost more weight over the course of the study than the group that was put on the 500-calorie diet.
Again, that's interesting.
It comes down to the point that your body has mechanisms that are designed to basically prevent you from burning too much fat too quickly.
Okay.
So yeah. Let's get into some tips on how do we prevent the body from going into a starved state. And let's start – basically, it's going to end up in this podcast, Blythe, being one humongous tip, right?
Yes. Yeah, it's a golden nugget. Come on now. Let's call it the golden nugget. That's what it is.
All right.
Or you guys are going to get a big nugget today.
Right. One humongous nugget, one humongous tip that in the beginning isn't going to sound like much of a golden nugget, because you probably have heard us talk about it 100 times before, and that is eating enough protein. Protein is how your body determines that nutrition is abundant.
You know what? I have a little blip I want to throw in here. When I first started bodybuilding, when I first got into, and I'm not saying everybody out there wants to be a bodybuilder, but when I first sort of shifted into the mentality of wanting to have a lower percentage of body fat, okay, I remember like the few weeks that I really started contemplating doing a competition, and I was in no way, shape, or form. I mean, I was like mid-30s body fat percentage, and I was just the normal average person who ate when I was hungry, didn't pay attention to what I was eating. I started tracking the amount of protein I was getting in each meal. That is where it started. I found out how important protein was, and I just started paying attention.
Yeah, I remember you telling us your story, and part of your story was you were sick and tired of doing all the things you thought were right and still mm-hmm. kind of feeling, skinny fat, right?
Yeah, yep. I just was never in as good of shape as I thought I was working for, and it never came to the point where I was working harder, but I was just working smarter. So the same amount of effort was being put in. I just changed what I was doing to get a different result.
Awesome. And so let's talk a bit about that. I'm gonna throw out one research study that was recently published, and talk about some of the key points in that study. And then we're going to talk about why protein is so important and how to choose the right protein for the best effect, and then Finally, we'll talk about leucine, which we've talked about briefly in some of the earlier shows, the earlier podcast, probably 2 years ago.
Yeah.
And give you some specific recommendations there as well to kind of supercharge your higher protein intake to make it even more effective for fat loss. Okay.
And I think this is going to be helpful for our listeners because people are always asking, well, what type of protein should I be eating? So we are going to tell you today.
Right. And so let's start with this one study that was published by the University of Illinois College of Agriculture, Consumer, and Environmental Sciences. In this study, they took 31 obese women, and they put them on a 1,400-calorie diet based on the food pyramid. Now, Blythe, you and I are not huge fans of the food pyramid. That was the study, and you know, I think it's pretty interesting that even doing that, they were able to see some pretty significant result. So the only difference between the two groups, they basically split the women into two groups. One group received a whey protein shake in between meals twice daily. Now, as far as exercise was concerned, there really wasn't much in the way of exercise. They just instructed them to exercise lightly, do some modest exercise. It was nothing mind-boggling as far as the exercise program is concerned. They did not observe them. They did not monitor their exercise program. They just basically said, work out mildly. Okay, pretty standard stuff.
Which is totally open for interpretation.
Yes. And so what they discovered was that the whey group, the group that consumed whey protein shake in between meals twice a day, lost 3.9% more weight and gained 5.8% more in the thigh muscle as evaluated by an MRI. Also, they noticed that strength and performance were better in the whey group. So the point of this study was just to demonstrate how adding a little bit extra whey protein to the mix in the form of a whey shake in between meals could significantly protect the muscle from erosion during a diet, during a dietary program designed to lose weight. Now, this is a big problem for people. Practically everybody who loses weight or goes on a weight loss program or even a good weight loss program, a program designed to burn fat, as we've described in previous shows, will lose muscle during the course of their program.
Mm-hmm.
It's almost universal.
Yeah. Can I interject something here? Something that jumped out at me when you were talking about the study, and this jumped out when we were talking about it before, when you actually told me about the study initially, is that you mentioned thigh muscle. And I swear to God, a big like red flag went woo-woo in front of my face because I'm a girl with soccer legs, as you like to call them. And I'm serious. And this is interpretation of what you hear, okay? Because when you say, well, her thigh muscle didn't shrink by, you know, whatever, I'm thinking, but I want my thigh muscle to shrink. So I want to, and I know better, okay? But I want to like null and void this for everybody who's listening is be careful what you're listening to, because hearing something like that totally closed my mind to, okay, well, that just doesn't sound right, but I actually know better. And I know that keeping the muscle is what is going to speed up your metabolism and help you lose body fat as time goes on. So I just, you know, being somebody who knows better, I just wanted to bring the awareness out there that sometimes hearing, well, if I eat less, I'll lose the weight, and stopping there, I want you guys to open your minds and listen to what we're telling you, you know, with an open mind and open ears rather than kind of like I did and close it off when I hear big thigh.
Big thigh. Right. You know, 5.8% is not a huge amount in the scheme of things, but it gives the body shape, right? And shape is what we want. We don't want to just be a smaller, thinner, emaciated version of who we are today.
And that's exactly right. And muscle is important. And I believe that they probably measured the thigh muscle because it's an easy muscle to measure.
Right.
I don't, you know, they might have said bicep, but it would have been smaller because the bicep muscle is much smaller. So I just want to throw out there that was a great example for me, something I learned about myself today, you know, when we talked about this, is that I hear things and I close them off. And I think that's why society, to rewind to the very beginning of the podcast, why we think that starvation will work, no matter how many times we're told.
Right. You got to think about it. Who starves themselves more? Well, people who suffer with anorexia. And if you look at their body fat percentages, they have among the highest body fat percentages of people out there because their muscles are what get burned away. The body holds onto the fat as much as possible, and because it perceives itself as starving, it wants to get rid of the metabolically active tissue. It's trying to protect you from dying of starvation. And so that's why the body typically, when you are dieting, has a tendency to digest the muscle away. It's trying to decrease your metabolism in order to protect you from starvation or give you a little bit more time to survive, so with hopes that the food will again find its way into your belly. So that's what's so interesting about this study was that by adding that protein, adding about 40 to 50 grams of protein per day to their already calorie deficient diet, provided benefit in protecting the muscle from breakdown, which is pretty fascinating, pretty important that people know that that's the case.
Yes, I totally agree. Yeah.
You know, aside from just the benefits to the muscle, you also get a dual benefit from protein, and that is by consuming protein in between meals, you decrease your appetite when mealtimes do roll around. So if you're eating three main meals and you're supplementing with whey protein in between those two meals, it basically sticks to our philosophy, which is you don't want to have insulin elevated all day long. So by consuming a whey protein powder in between those meals, you're going to get the nutrients to the cells without spiking insulin levels too high.
Right. And if you choose something that's a lower carbohydrate version.
Exactly. You definitely want to make sure. We should definitely point that out, that you don't want to get a whey protein, because there are some muscle-gaining powders on the market that are not just high protein. They're high-calorie, high-carb as well. Mm-hmm. Those are for people who are looking to add a lot of muscle mass to their frame and don't mind adding a little bit extra fat. Those are typically for people who are genetically gifted, who have a tendency to body build, and they have a tendency to gain muscle and gain fat while they're preparing for the show, and then the few weeks before the show, they focus their attention on getting rid of the fat, right? Is that how it works?
Yeah, that's exactly how it works. And what happens is those people are also exercising and training so intensely that they end up burning those extra calories anyway. It's almost hard to eat enough calories if you're a large person anyway with a lot of muscle. It's hard to eat all those calories. You end up having to drink some of them. So that's why they make those mass shakes.
Right. Okay, so let's speak a bit to protein and why it's so important, and then get into some specific stuff that you guys can use to further improve your results with protein supplementation. Okay. So this is a research study that was published by Dr. Donald Lehman at the University of Illinois. He talks about that the recommended dosage of protein for the average person is about 1.5 grams of protein per kilogram of body weight. Now, that's far more than what is recommended by the RDA or the FDA for general health. Why is that? Well, the FDA and the government guidelines are really based on this process called nitrogen balance. Nitrogen balance is about assessing how much nitrogen is coming into the body from protein versus how much is being kicked out, usually through the urine or through the waste products of the body. And it's really designed just to show that in the average person, we want it to be in what we call nitrogen balance, meaning that you have a certain amount of nitrogen going in and the same amount coming out, so you're neither losing nor gaining muscle. Okay. If your goal is to gain muscle or to really protect the muscle during weight loss, those guidelines are totally useless. And what we've discovered is you need about 1.5 grams of protein per kilogram of body weight, which if we estimate it, you know, here in the States would amount to about 3/4 of a gram of protein per pound of body weight.
I usually recommend like one. Because it's so hard for people to get there, I usually recommend like 1 gram of fat per pound of body weight up
protein.
To – oh, I'm sorry. What did I say?
You said fat.
1 gram of fat? Oh, geez. Yeah. No. Heck no. 1 gram of protein. I'm sorry, guys. Yeah, 1 gram of protein per pound of body weight.
Yeah, that's a good general recommendation for most people. You don't have to worry about that causing problems for the kidneys. That's an old wise tale. It's not anything –
thank you for mentioning that.
Yeah. So 3/4 – is the minimum. Let's say 1 gram of protein per pound of body weight is probably a good recommendation as well. Play with those amounts, play with those quantities, and find what fits your lifestyle and what works for you. Remember, guys, this is about doing your own clinical studies in your own body to find the optimal approach for you. And so 3/4 to 1 gram per pound of body weight seems to be good for our Aussie folks and our European listeners, 1.5 grams of protein per kilogram of body weight. But we don't stop there, do we? Because in order to gain the full benefit of protein for fat loss purposes, there are some other guidelines that we have to focus on. And so, Blythe, it's not just about protein, is it? What else do we have to worry about?
Well, we need to talk about fiber. Mm-hmm. We need to talk about carbohydrates. Mm-hmm. And we need to talk about the type of proteins or the amino acids that you get from the proteins that you're eating. Which one of those do you want to talk about first?
Well, let's start with carbs because that'll lead into a discussion on fiber.
Okay.
And then we'll get back to protein and the amino acids, specifically one amino acid, which we talked about early in our podcast history.
Yeah, I think that's like between podcast 1 and 3, our general toolbox that we talk about.
Right. And you know, I don't know if some of our listeners realize this, because some of you guys come in some of our later shows, like you may download the latest show and then realize there are other shows back there. But those first shows, when you first hear us talking, those were 2 years ago. You know, I think a lot of people think, well, they were just over the last few weeks. But no, that was 2 years ago. That's why we sound
like newbies, maybe.
Like newbies, yeah. Early on in the podcast, but we've even considered redoing our first couple of podcasts. But people seem to like them, so we keep them.
Yeah, the good oldies. Okay, so let's get back to the discussion. Okay, so if you pick up I'm going to say a good diet book, and I don't mean a diet book, but like a paleo lifestyle book. Okay. And I'm talking healthy carbs now. We're going to talk about carbohydrates. The general recommendation is right around 150 grams of carbohydrates a day. That sounds like a lot to me. If I am not to monitor my carbs, I probably get around 150 grams of carbs. Now, they're not all unprocessed vegetables or fruits, but 150 grams of carbs is fairly lenient, don't you think?
I do. You know, Dr. Donald,
for somebody my size. I'm sorry. I should have put that in there. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. You've got to kind of take that into account when you're looking at every macronutrient, whether it's protein, fat, or carbohydrates. But Dr. Lehman at the University of Illinois, he recommends that people, in order to get the full benefit for fat loss, besides the protein recommendations, you've got to keep your carbohydrate intake to 150 grams or less. Now, that's not the first time I've heard that. As you mentioned, we heard that Mark Sisson, author of the book, The Primal Blueprint, he also has suggested that 150 grams is the quantity of carbohydrates that he believes for most of the population they can consume in order to maintain weight. For fat loss, he suggests closer to the 75 gram per day. And I kind of agree with that position. I think Dr. Lehman probably is right that there are a lot of people, especially if we're talking about people who are on average eating 300 grams of carbs on a daily basis, and then they go from 300 to 150. That certainly is going to be enough for fat loss.
Mm-hmm.
But as we get closer to our set point level or our set point fat level, we're probably going to need to decrease or contract that a bit so that it gets closer to the 75 grams in order to continue to see that weight loss. But again, it comes down to what philosophy, Blythe? It comes down to that philosophy that you're an individual.
And everybody has different activity levels, different daily routines.
Different
you could
genetics.
Be somebody... Yeah, different genetics, exactly. And that's something that I often forget to mention, but that does play a large role. You could be somebody who's going from eating pure processed foods, never had, you know, haven't had like a fresh fruit or vegetable like picked from a tree in a really long time.
Yes.
We're all starting from different places. So it's important to take all of that into consideration when thinking about this.
Right.
But now, the 150 grams of carbs or less. So you and I had talked, and we sort of decided that maybe cutting that in half, if you're somebody who's already eating very healthy, you're very conscious of the types of carbohydrates you're getting, so meaning they're unprocessed for the most part. You know, say you're not a big starchy type of person. You don't eat a lot of those types of foods. Cutting the 150 in half, like say 75 grams of carbohydrates, healthy carbohydrates a day would probably result in, more than likely would result in, fat loss.
Right. I would say, depending upon where you're at, if we were to say we have somebody who's just starting to listen to the show and they really have not been on any dietary program, and like I say, maybe they're consuming 300 grams of carbs in a day, mm-hmm. then going to 150 is going to be enough to get rid of a lot of the easy fat, to start that process of weight loss and do it in such a way that's not going to leave them feeling overly restricted.
Right. Right. But cutting your carbohydrate intake in half, you will notice changes in probably maybe your tiredness mid-afternoon, might not get so tired. There will be a lot of benefits that come from, depending on what type of the carbohydrates you were eating.
Right.
You know, you'll notice a lot of difference, and I think there'll be changes for the better.
And a lot of our more advanced listeners, people who have been with us for some time, who are already eating like this, may need to lower it to 90, 75 grams or lower in some unlucky individuals who have really bad genetics when we're talking about insulin sensitivity. I happen to be one of them, so I certainly am not judging because I am definitely one of them. But, you know, just really tailor it to your results. Fair enough?
Yeah, fair enough. And use yourself as the experiment. Drop it by 10 grams of carbohydrates, which means that you're going to have to pay attention to what you're eating and log your food. But drop 10 grams of carbohydrates. If you're somebody who's already, you know, on the lower side, like you and myself, drop it down by 10. Do it for a week or two. See how you go.
Exactly. Perfect. Mm-hmm. So that brings us to the discussion on fiber. Fiber,
yes.
In the research literature, has been pretty clearly demonstrated to be a asset to us as far as weight loss and fat loss is concerned. So when we're taking into account total carbohydrate intake, as we've mentioned in previous shows, we talk about net carbohydrates, which is simply the total carbohydrates minus the fiber content. We don't count the fiber in the carb count for the day, but we do count sugar alcohols, which are things that are added, like you find in Atkins bars or protein in some protein powders and such.
And you know what? Those are things that I think people will hear. That's another big red flag, right, waving in front of my face, because you can look at all of those artificially sweetened things and see how high they are in sugar alcohols. I'm going to use sugar-free syrup as an example. It says it's got 12 grams of carbs, 6 grams of the sugar alcohols that make it sweet. Those count. Those count as carbs. So there are no free carbs in that
right.
sugar-free syrup.
Right.
So what I'm saying, like in for instance, with that, you may just want to go with the real maple syrup.
Now, you had mentioned that you have recommended to some people that they do count the fiber in the total carbohydrate count. I actually don't mind that approach, Blythe. You know, if you've got somebody who's a little bit on the stagnant side as far as their weight loss is concerned, mm-hmm. simply by doing that, you'll just naturally cut back on the usable carbs that are in the food. So if we're talking about somebody who's been on, let's say, 150 gram program where they've been consuming about 150 grams of carbs, and they that would be net carbs, and we were to say to them, well, now start counting the fiber as a carbohydrate. All that will do is that'll naturally decrease the total quantity of net carbohydrates, while from a psychological perspective, allowing them to continue to get the 150 grams of carbohydrates.
Yeah, you know, I guess I'm kind of like the hard-nosed one when it comes to this, a little bit of tough love. And when people are like starting to read labels, I should be more proud of them that they actually recognize that there is dietary fiber in what they're eating. But I'm like, okay, listen, there's no free carbs. You got to start paying attention. If you're eating something that lists the dietary fiber, then you're probably eating something from a package. You shouldn't be eating something from a package. And why I said that is because this individual that I'm thinking of, a girl who comes to our gym, her name is Cammy, she was reading the dietary fiber on the back of a Fiber One bar. And I'm thinking,
right.
Well, first of all, why are you eating a Fiber One bar? That's a step above a Twinkie, but it's a step below, you know, some broccoli and a protein
right.
shake or, you know, an apple or something like that. So
two
I was kind of being
two
tough.
Steps below.
Yeah. Two steps below. That's exactly.
Yeah, Fiber One bars. You think that it just naturally has more fiber, but they add fiber. They add psyllium and other fibers to it in order to bring up the fiber count. So it's not food fiber that's naturally found in the actual whole foods that they use in the product. And that's important to note because they also add, in a lot of those bars, they add high fructose corn syrup, which, as you know, is not the best thing in the world.
Not the best thing in the world. It's one of the worst things in the world is the way I look at it.
Very true. Very true. All right. So, yeah, I don't mind subtracting the fiber from the total carbohydrate count. But if you want to play the mind game, you can keep the fiber in there and just try to maintain that total carbohydrate level.
Let me just throw this in there. How about if you're eating something that's processed because it's got dietary fiber in it, replace it with something that naturally has fiber in it.
Right. Fair enough.
Okay.
All right. Good. Okay. Protein source.
Yes.
We need to eat high quality protein sources. And when it comes to weight loss, we're going to basically determine the quality of the protein based on the quantity of an amino acid in the protein called leucine. Okay. Mm-hmm. We talked about this briefly in an early show. I think you said it's somewhere between the first and the third show where we were suggesting adding leucine to water when we are decreasing our caloric intake, because leucine seems to play a very important role in a number of factors in the body. Number one, it protects the muscle from erosion. That particular amino acid seems to have an especially potent benefit as it pertains to protecting the muscle from breakdown during times of lower calorie intake. It stimulates a part of the cell called mTOR, which is basically like a molecular switch that turns on muscle repair and regeneration. Very fascinating benefit of leucine that seems to be specific towards that amino acid and not so much the other amino acids found naturally in proteins. It okay. also has a benefit to insulin sensitivity. Leucine's one of the few amino acids that do not seem to trigger insulin release and actually seems to promote sensitivity to insulin so that the insulin that your body does produce works better. And that allows the body to produce less insulin in relation to the meals that you're consuming, especially the carb-containing meals. And then finally, leucine appears to magnify the effect of the total protein intake. So protein in the body generally acts as a building block for muscle. But leucine appears to have a side benefit that seems to trigger the use of those protein building blocks.
And that's important. The absorption of that protein is important.
Yeah, the absorption and the utilization. So we want it to be utilized in such a way that instead of being converted into sugar, it actually gets converted into muscle. Right. And so there seems to be that that side benefit there. But in the end, what it comes down to is leucine-containing proteins are very high. You know, most proteins contain leucine, but the quantity is what's important. We want to make sure that we're getting a good dose of that leucine when we are supplementing, especially when we're supplementing with protein in the form of powders and bars, right?
Okay, yeah. So where would we find that?
Well,
where can leucine be found? Can it be found in, say, like an organic chicken breast or ground buffalo?
Yeah.
Is leucine – okay. Leucine is in
– is naturally found in animal proteins.
Okay.
It's found in high quantities in whey protein, pea protein, soy protein. So you find it in most proteins. The question is the quantity.
How about like a hemp protein?
Hemp protein, I didn't look it up, but I'm sure it has leucine. How much it has leucine in comparison to these other sources, I'm not exactly sure.
Yeah, I would venture to say it's probably not as high.
Well, yeah, it could be. We'll have to check that to make sure,
okay.
though.
Yep.
But it seems as though the highest quantity of leucine per gram is going to be whey protein, which has about 10% of its protein comes from leucine. Mm-hmm. You compare that to pea and soy protein, which are typically about 8% as far as the leucine content of the food.
Okay.
So pretty much any of those will work. Whey protein has the side benefit that it provides high levels of glutamine, L-glutamine. And glutamine is another amino acid. It's actually the most abundant amino acid in the body and in the muscles, and also has additional benefits in the production of a very important antioxidant called glutathione, and is also important in proper immune function. So that's one reason we really like whey protein. If you are not vegetarian and if you're not dairy sensitive, then whey protein is typically the best source of supplemental protein when it comes to weight loss, as proven by that previous research that we talked about and other studies before as well. And it also has to do with the tryptophan content. Tryptophan is another amino acid that helps to promote the production of serotonin. Serotonin helps to keep us keep our mood balanced and our appetite low.
Okay. Good to know. Another nugget.
Another nugget. So how much lutein, or I'm sorry, how much leucine do we need daily in order to promote fat loss? Do you know the answer, Blythe?
I believe it's about, is it 25 grams?
You're close. It's 8 to 10 grams of leucine. What you're thinking about is it takes about 25 grams of whey protein to provide a serving of leucine.
Gotcha. Okay.
So one scoop of whey protein contains about 25 grams of protein. And within that, you get about 2.5 grams of leucine per dose. Right? And
gotcha.
And the research that's been published to date has looked at approximately between 8 and 10 grams per day seem to be the kind of the magic number for promoting weight loss while protecting the muscle mass. What does that equate to? Well, it equates to about 4 servings of leucine-containing protein. So in some studies, specifically when they were looking at weight loss and muscle mass, they used 2.5 grams of leucine supplementation 4 times a day with each of the meals of the day.
Okay. That's simple. I think most people could get that in.
They could. Or if not, using the 2 scoops of whey protein, the one serving in between meals 1 and 3, right? Mm-hmm. So, you know, you would have 3 main meals and then 2 whey protein doses in between those meals. That would give you about 5 grams of leucine. And that may, in fact, be enough.
Okay.
Most of the studies have found, 8 to 10 grams is an effective dose, but less may be effective in some people as well. It probably depends upon their system and their body.
Right. So, and again, it's all up to the individual. Everybody's a little bit different. I just looked up the hemp seed while we're here, and which they use hemp seed to make hemp protein. It does... The amino acid profile for hemp seed, and I found this on hempseed.ca. It's a website about why you would replace hemp instead of whey. They do talk about dairy sensitivities and things like that. But it has – one serving has 0.678% of the tryptophan, which we talked about. The leucine is 3.5%. percent of your daily need in one serving, and the glutamine is 9.25%.
Okay.
So it sounds about
Glutamine is typically not found in high quantities in vegetarian source protein, so that kind of sets hemp aside. It seems like a pretty good quantity. Now, if we're talking about hemp seed, that may be different from the quantity of protein in hemp protein.
You'll have to read the label. Yes.
Right. So check the label and we'll see. There's a for our vegetarian friends out there, there's a protein on the market called plant fusion protein. And that plant fusion protein seems to provide additional – what they do is they basically take a number of different vegetarian proteins, mix them together, and then on top of that, they supplement it with branched-chain amino acids and L-glutamine. And so it looks – they make that protein from an amino acid profile look much more like whey protein. So I really like that version for our vegetarian friends out there. All right. So that's kind of the discussion that we wanted to have today. If we maintain a sufficient quantity of protein in the diet, we typically can send signals to the body that the body is not starved for nutrition.
Yes, and I think to keep the body in balance so it can receive the proper signals, so you can recognize the signals, is that you have to stay active. And, you know, we talked about the last podcast about just parking your car a little farther away or, just daily activities, just bumping them up a little bit. And that will help with balance. And once your body is in balance, you start to receive the signals, you know, appropriately.
Right. And you're providing the protein, you're providing the leucine, you're keeping your carb intake fairly low, and then the catalyst for all this is high-intensity resistance training. So we want to definitely promote more muscle mass and maintain that muscle mass during the process of weight loss and fat loss by maintaining our resistance training schedule. it is crucial for you to, if your main goal is to succeed with long-term fat loss, that you keep a good, solid resistance training program.
So for those of you who are listening to us and you're working out, make the next set extra, extra tough.
Yes.
Push yourselves.
Yes. Okay? And give everybody the instructions on how they can get a hold of us.
Sure. You guys can find us on Facebook, Cut the Fat Podcast, all one long word, no spaces in between. Please like our page. We're getting up there in the numbers. I like that we keep getting new people each week. It's wonderful. We've got tons of information to share with you guys. And I love when you people post questions up there. Inquiries. We love the kudos and the thanks that we get from you guys, too. I know we both it warms our heart and we both share those. Whenever we read something exciting, you can also review us on iTunes. Leave a little review for us. It's 1 to 5 stars. Preferably you give us 5 stars. We'd appreciate it. Leave a nice comment for us. We do read those. And you can also get in contact with us through our website, www.cutthefatpodcast.com. Please share us with your friends and family. It's free. Why not?
Well said.
Thanks.
Thank you guys for tuning in, and we'll see you here at the next Cut the Fat podcast. As always, we leave you guys with
The Grilled Lincolns.
The song is Something New. Check them out on iTunes. You can also find them on Rhapsody or on their website, grilledlincolns.com. They are so gracious as to let us use their music for our podcast, and I really do dig it. So,
hey, wait. Can I mention something real quick? I heard Riddy got married. Is that right?
Riddy, who's the lead singer of Grilled Lincolns, did get married. Very good.
Yeah. Oh, I heard that.
They're putting together their fourth album, which is hopefully will be out in the next few months. But apparently, this is going to be their best album ever. So, looking forward to it. All right, you guys. We'll see you at the next Cut the Fat podcast.
Train hard.
And see ya.
Something new. Well, I'm your brother and I hope you do. I don't know what can make you feel your days, but for now I wish you'd just come back when you're okay. Forget your shoes, just wear your flip-flops in the snow. It's hard to really care when you